We're holding on page Samach Beis in Sanhedrin, Os Kuf Lamed Zayin. We've been talking about Tnius HaMesim, but now the Gemara has a piece that actually in the original Gemara, it's actually a little bit out of order. We had before a bunch of the more discussion of Tnius HaMesim and places where we see proofs of it in the Torah. In between there, there was actually something. There was actually the following piece of Gemara, but in Ein Yaakov it put him more in a logical order to first talk about all the things, most of the things having to do with Tchias HaMesim, and then talk about this. What did it do? Now it's going to talk about the importance of that you're not allowed to deprive a person of teaching him Torah. What does that have to do with anything that we were talking about over here? The Noda Behuda was actually asked that by one of the big goyim of his times, Rabbi Yeshaya Pick Berlin. This Rabbi Yeshaya was a tremendous baki in Shas and Midrashim and all other things like that. So you have, for example, in a regular Gemara, you have Maseres HaShas, you have the original Maseres HaShas, the cross references to the different other places, and then you have this Rabbi Yeshaya added a lot more material to it, and also he wrote similar notes on many other Sfarim as well. There was a big goyim and a big baki. Anyway, he asked the Noda Behuda, what is this piece doing over here? So the Noda Behuda explained to him, because after we talk about how you're not allowed to deprive another person of teaching him Torah, even though you may think that he's not up to it, afterwards it talks about, and what is the schad of a person who does teach Torah, is that if he teaches it ba'olam hazeh, zoicho malam de ba'olam haba, he'll have the schus to teach it in the future, so therefore it fits very nicely in between all these pieces about Tchias HaMesim and about what we'll be able to do, la'asad lava, especially we learned yesterday about the part that a person says shira in this world, he's going to have the schus to say it in another. So therefore, this piece fits very nicely in the middle of that. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, kol amar neya halacha mipi Talmid." A person who deprives halacha from the mouth of a Talmid, meaning that a Talmid wants to learn from him and he doesn't want to teach the Talmid. So then, it's as if he's robbing him of the inheritance of his ancestors. Which means, the Torah is an inheritance for every Yid from Sheshes and Bereshis, and then when someone is able to teach him and is not able to, then he's taking that away from him. Now, why would he not want to teach him? What would be the Rebbe's mentality to not teach? What would be his thought process to not teach him? Marsha points out, you have the famous story in Edervin with her Preda, where he had a Talmud, where he had to teach him 400 times before he got anything, and one time he had to teach him 800 times. So now you may well have a Rebbe who says, I can't be bothered. This is not a Talmud Hogun. He's not a worthy Talmud. He's not suitable to teach it for me to teach him Torah. So then it's like stealing his ancestors' inheritance from it, meaning a Yid is naturally made to be able to learn Torah. Okay, so some people pick it up quicker than others. Some people may take 400 times, but nevertheless, you don't have the right to deprive him of it. In particular, the expression is mipi Talmud, that's from the mouth of the Talmud, as if, like he says, the Talmud has no mouth, he's not going to be able to speak out and say what he's supposed to say anyway, why should I bother with him? We find at the end of the Alter Rebbe's Hakdama to Tanya, Hakdama to Malakit, he explains over there how Tanya is meant to be written and is meant to be the Alter Rebbe speaking personally to every chassid. But if you have a person who doesn't understand, then he needs to go to the mashpiyim in town and they'll help him understand. And the Alter Rebbe stresses, don't be monea bar, as it says over here in the Gemara, don't withhold and say this person is not up to it and I can't teach it to him. You need to teach the other person Tanya, you need to teach the other person Chassidus, and you need to teach the other person in general Torah.
In that place, it says about the Talmud that does not get it, that he should learn a Umus.
No, there can be. I mean, he's not going to be a great Talmud Chacham necessarily. So sure, he should learn an umnus. So he has what to do to keep himself busy and to earn a trade. But no, he still has to learn Torah, and you still have a responsibility to teach him on whatever level he can learn.
until a certain age, you bring him in if it doesn't work.
Yeah, if a kid in particular in cheder is not picking it up, then fine, eventually then, but you can't refuse to teach him just because he's a slow learner, basically. Now you do have, for example, there's a Gemara in Chulin that says there can be a different meaning of Talmud Hogun, Talmud Sheine Hogun. You can have a would-be Talmud who's partially not an Erlich person. So then Taka the Gemara says you shouldn't teach him, that's Kazerdik Evan the Merkulis, you have to first teach him Midas Tovis before you can accept him as a Talmud, fine, but that's not what we're talking about over here. Okay. So the Gemara continues. If a person holds back halacha from a Talmud and refuses to teach him, even unborn babies in the womb curse him. As the pasuk says, so the whole pasuk goes like this. So later on, the Gemara is going to dash in the second half of the pasuk, but the whole pasuk goes like this. Somebody who holds back grain, the nations will curse him. Uvracha l'rosh mashker, and a bracha on the head of the person who provides grain. So pasuk pshat is, in other words, exactly what it sounds like. If you have, let's say, it's a famine or something, and somebody is holding back and hoarding grain and not selling it, then everybody's going to curse him for that. And on the other hand, if he goes and generously shares it and sells it, then everybody's going to give him a bracha. Now the Gemara is doubting that the grain and the food we're talking about is Torah. So minei abor yikvu la'oim, the one who holds back bar, the grain of Torah, yikvu la'oim, the la'oim will curse him. So what's la'oim? Ve'in la'oim ela uberin. The word la'oim in this context refers dafka to unborn babies. As we find, when Rivka is pregnant and by Yisroitz Tzavon and Bekirba, and she's having a hard pregnancy, so she's told the La'oim Mil'oim Yemon, so you're going to have two babies, and one La'oim is going to overpower the other La'oim. So we see now, and of course, La'oim over there means nations, and the two nations, the Jewish people and Edom, that are going to come out from Yaakov and Esav, but we see that the word La'oim can mean can also mean unborn babies. Ve'en koi ve'la klola, and when it says yikvuhu la'umim, yikvuhu la'oim, the word the shorish kov means ela klala, it means cursing. Shenema ma ekev like kabri kale, as Bilam says, how can I curse the Jewish people if Hashem doesn't want to curse them? They ain't bar ela torda, and the word bar, the grain over here refers to torda. Then the word bar literally means clean. So it means in the clean, pure torda. Shenema, as we find a pasuk nashkuvar, hold fast to, literally nashku means kiss. So kiss purity, kiss the kiss, and hold fast to the purity of torda. Pen yenaf, so lest Hashem get angry. So we see that bar means the teachings of Hashem, which in context, this is David warning the nations of the world, don't think to start up with the Jewish people. Hashem is on our side, and you're going to be in trouble if you try to start up. But we see, in other words, that he's telling them, you have to stick to the pure way that Hashem wants, which is in this case not to start up with the Jewish people, and therefore we see that it refers to Torah. So therefore, so altogether, Menei Abur, the one who holds back Torah, Yikvu La'oim, the unborn babies cursing. So why dafka the unborn babies? So Marsha says, listen, you know, again, we're talking about, the Rebbe says, well, why should I bother teaching him? He even has no mouth. He's not able to speak back and then explain and be able to show that he understood anything. Well, the unborn baby also doesn't have a mouth yet. His mouth is closed in the womb. And yet a Malach is teaching him the whole Torah. So therefore, so, and the Malach doesn't say, well, this baby can't learn anyway, why should I bother? So therefore, so now, if this person is acting this way, then therefore, the babies, the unborn babies, are cursing him because, by his logic, they wouldn't be learning Torah either. Another point, H. Yosef brings a point from Tardas Chaim. Also, the point is, they have a Malach teaching them, so they don't need him to teach them. Nevertheless, they still hold it against him, Hayitachan, that he's not teaching others. And then there's also a related explanation that, what's the idea? What's the point of learning the whole Torah in the womb if anyway the baby forgets it as soon as it comes out? Yeah, the rare case where he doesn't, the famous story from back in the yurds of a kid in Eretz Yisrael who once he was able to speak, they realized he knew Kola Torah Kola, and they brought him, I think, to the Belzer Rebbe, and he gave him a flick and caused him to forget it. But anyway, most of us forget it when we're born, so what's the point? The point is, this way it gets impressed on the neshama before the baby is even born, and that way later on, when a person grows up, then they're able to, when they're learning Torah, it's not they're learning it for the first time, they're relearning it, and therefore that helps them be able to tackle learn it. So now what happens is, if the Rebbe is saying about this would-be Talmud, I don't want to teach him, I can't be bothered, he's not going to pick it up anyway, then, in effect, you're saying, well, then the whole point of him learning Torah in the womb was worthless also. So then the babies are cursing such a person. Are you talking? You're saying that our learning Torah in the womb doesn't count for anything. So the Gemara continues. It's not just that the baby's cursing. He's caused to be punctured with holes like a sieve. Because again, another meaning of yikvu is to make holes. In Malachim, in the story of Yehoyada gathering money for Bedek Abayis to renovate the Beis Mikdash, we read it as Vaftarada for Parshas Shalom. So it describes how he took a box and punched a hole in the door by Yikuv Chorbedalta, and he set it up as the world's first pushka in the Beis Mikdash so that people could put in the coins that they're giving for Matzah Shekel and for Bedek Abayis and whatnot. So therefore, Yikvu Lo'im also means that they puncture him full of holes, which means, Marsha says, the vote is that, in other words, what happens to a kavi that's full of holes? Everything leaks out of it. So therefore, the idea of it is that here, this person who refuses to teach Torah, then he ends up getting full of holes, and he himself, all his Torah leaks out, and he forgets it. Abaya says another way of comparing it. It's like the colander used by laundrymen. So Rashi describes that by launderers. Rashi describes it's a keli with holes in it, and they fill it with water, and then they use it to sprinkle water on the clothes as part of the process of cleaning them. Now, nowadays, for example, irons have a steam setting, so that steam comes out and helps when you're pressing the clothes, and then the water vapor that comes out helps you press them properly. So in the olden days, they would use a colander-like thing for that purpose to sprinkle water on the clothes. So now, in other words, Abaya is saying the comparison is, instead of a sieve, the comparison is to this keli that's used to sprinkle water on the clothes. What's the difference, the point of that comparison? So comparing him to a sieve, then, the Torah Chaim points out, Eitz Yosef brings, he didn't want to teach the grain of Torah to others, and a sieve is used for sifting grain. Therefore, he's made full of holes, like a sieve, and all the Torah leaks out of him. Abaya is taking a different view of it, says Marsha. The Torah is compared to water. Therefore, he's compared to a keli full of water with holes where all the water leaks out through the holes. The Maharal makes another point as well. A sieve is very, very full of holes, but like it's hard to like zero in on here. There's a particular hole here. The whole thing is holes, as opposed to with an uchla de kasri, with this keli used by the launderers. Each hole is much more noticeable, representing, in other words, like it's a much more noticeable effect that it's going to have on him. The result that he didn't teach Torah to a Talmud. The im limdoi maschorai. Now then, the question is, if he does teach this Talmud, so this difficult Talmud, he is like the Preda and teaches him 400 times maschorai. So then, what's his schar? So in Rapurda's case, actually, he was told by a baskol that you can either get chayer and mabar for the entire generation, or you can live 400 years. And in the end, he got both. But okay, most of us are not Rapurdas. So what does a person get for it? And the answer is Amar Rava, Amar Rav Sheshes. Zoicha the brachas ki Yosef. He's zoicha to brachas of the kind that Yosef got. Shenema, because that same pasuk of Manea Bar, Yikru L'Oim, the end of the pasuk is of Racha L'Rosh Mashver, and a bracha on the head of the one who sells the grain. Now, who's Ve'in Mashver, or the Yosef? We find the word Mashver specifically means Yosef. Shenema, the Yosef who ashalat ala Oretz, Yosef is the one in control in Mitzrayim, who are Mashver. The Cholam Oretz, he's the one selling grain to all the people of the land. So, Bracha L'Rosh Mashver, the Bracha goes to the head of the person who teaches Torah, where he will be like the Mashver, like Yosef. And the comparison is, Marsha says, that Yosef provided gashmi a stick of food for everybody's bodies, and this person is providing ruchni a stick of food for a person's neshama, therefore he gets that quality of bracha. In particular, what do we mean by that? Marsha points out, he gets a nachla bli mitzorin. So you have, we know that when it comes to the ovos, that the nachla that was promised to Avraham and Yitzchak was a limited one, was by Avraham, whatever you see, by Yitzchak, kol ha'aretz Yisrael, by Yaakov, it's a fanachta yom of a kema, it's a fun of a negra, without limit, and therefore you have the loshen ha'pasik v'achalticha nachlas Yaakov avicha, which means a nachla bli mitzorim. Well, Yaakov says to Yosef, Birchus Avicha, Govra Birchus Hara, I'm giving to you the bracha of your father, the bracha that I myself got, a Nachla B'Nitzarim, I'm giving it to you above and beyond the brachas from my ancestors Avraham and Yitzchak. So therefore, Yosef, in short, was given a Nachla B'Nitzarim, and now the person who teaches Torah like this, Also, Midah Kenegan Midah. He doesn't take into consideration the Mitzorim, the limitations that this Talmud has, so therefore he himself is getting a Nachla B'Mitzorim for that. And furthermore, Omer Rav Sheshes, Kol Melamed Torah Ba'olam Hazeh, a person who teaches Torah in this world, Zoicho Melamda La'olam Haba, he will have the schus to teach that same Torah La'olam Haba on a higher level. Shenemar, as a different pasuk in Mishlei says, Umarve Gamhu Yoda. The Marve, where Rashi says two explanations. Marve can mean the one can mean Meloshin Rava, somebody who waters and gives to drink the others. So you have a Talmud who's thirsty for the water of Torah, and he gives, and he's Marve, he slakes his thirst. Gamhu Yoda, he will also be doing that. Yoda, he will be doing the same giving of drink for thirst, La Olam Haba. Also, Rashi says the word marve itself is from the same lashon as mora, as it teaches. So marve, the one who teaches, gam hu yoda, he will also teach in the future as well. Which is also, then, in other words, Marashal says, is also a Yosef supported his family in olam hazeh, and he was zeicha to Yaakov's bracha for olam haba. So now this person is zeicha to the same kind of thing. And the Gemara says, so again, this is as the Noda Yehuda explains to Rabbi Shaya Pick Berlin, this is the reason why this piece of Gemara comes in over here, because we're saying over here about this point that he'll be Zoicha La'olam Haba, which is related to this whole point of Tchias Amesim, which is this section of the Perek. So in this connection, speaking of what a person accomplishes in this world, he's going to have the schus to accomplish the same thing in the next world, Amar Rabbi Elazar, called Parnas Shemanigas Hatzibu Benachas, any community leader who leads the people gently in this world, so he's not overbearing over them, he doesn't lord it over them, etc. Zoicho menagam la'olam haba, he will have the schus to lead them la'olam haba. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, ki merachmam yenahagim, the one who has rachmanus on them will lead them. Pasuk chat is talking about Hashem, but the Gemara is saying that it refers to the one who had rachmanus on them in this world, and yenahagim, he will continue to lead them in the future. V'amaboy mayim yenahalem, and he will show them the way along the springs of water. Pasuk chat is, this is talking about how Hashem is going to lead the Jewish people through the deserts to come back to Eretz Yisrael at the time of the Golam Mitzvah Shlema, but now the Gemara is understanding that it also refers to a Parnas Al Tzibur, where he did his job properly in this world, and therefore he has the schus of Yenahagim in the next world. Now, what's the Ma'boy Mayim? Ma'ashar points out, again, the Torah is called water, Torah Nimshal Al Mayim. So therefore it means, when is it going to be that he has the schus, Zoychom Menagam La'olam Haba, only if, when he was leading them, he was leading them gently, but it was also al maboy mayim, it was also on springs of water, meaning al pi Torah. Meaning, sometimes, now it can happen if the people are not living up to what the Torah says, then he may not be able to be so benachas. He may have to be harsh, he may have to be overbearing with them to get them to do the right thing. Well, that's how it is, in other words. So it's not benachas, he's just treating them nicely and kindly, just as an end in itself. It's always with the purpose of making sure they stay on my boy mind and using whichever means are necessary at any given time, so then he's Zoicho Menagam La'olam Haba. Since we're mentioning something that Rabbi Elazar said, so the Gemara brings in a number of other memories in Agadah from Rabbi Elazar, which, even though they're less directly connected to what we've been learning, to the subject of Tchias HaMeisim, or to the subject of Olam Hazeh versus Olam Haba. So for Amar Rabbi Elazar, G'doyla Deya Shnitna Ben Shtei Oisis. G'deya, knowledge, is a great thing that it was placed between two Oisis. Now, Oisis literally means letters. So Rashi says two explanations. It can mean letters of Hashem's name, as in other words, we're going to say there's a name of Hashem, then the word Deya, and then another name of Hashem. Or the names themselves can be called Oisius in the sense, Ois doesn't just mean a letter, Ois means a symbol, and each letter of each name of Hashem is a symbol. Ois hu b'tzava shalo, it's a symbol of the distinctiveness and the uniqueness of Hashem among any other among all his, you have all the Nivroim, and then you have Hashem is above and unique relative to all of them, and therefore each name of Hashem is called an Ois. to now, Das, Dea, is a tremendous thing that was placed between two names of Hashem. Shenema ki keil Deus Hashem. The pasuk says Hashem, a God of knowledges is Hashem. So therefore, so we see you have keil, then you have Deus, and then you have Hashem. So that shows us the greatness of Dea. Maharsha explains that this is actually the Maharsha over here is actually taken from his Pirush on the Sechta Brachas, where you have this memory as well. He explains you have Chochma, Bina, and Das, and so Das is the greatest of them. And what's the idea? That Das means, among other things, that Das means the ability to be able to combine together the... now, like this, what do we mean the Osius of Hashem's name? So specifically, he says it does mean Osius, as in letters. To know how to combine together the letters of Hashem's name to be able to accomplish things with them is a tremendous thing. Specifically, we know that Bezalel knew how to do that. Bezalel knew, Yedeyahu Bezalel, to combine together the letters to Nivru Behen Shemayim Va'aretz, and with that knowledge, he was able to build the Mishkan. So now we're saying over here that Dea is put between two Osius, meaning when a person has the Dea to know how to be able to use, how to be able to combine together the letters and the midos of Hashem, like Bezalel did, then that's a tremendous thing. Other than that, you have it as there's a number of places in Chassidus where it talks about that, first of all, the deos over here in plural, we mean is Das Elyon and Das Tachton. You have Das Elyon, which is the Abish's point of view, Einod Milavada, and then you have Das Tachton, our point of view, where we're the Yesh, and it seems the Abish is, and it seems that the Abish is Ayin. So therefore, so Kael Deus Hashem, Hashem combines together those two and has both of those perspectives, and it's the job of a person to also be able to understand things from both of those perspectives, and Gdola Dea, when a person is able to do that, that's a tremendous thing that he's able to combine together Das Elyon and Das Tachton. Another place that Tzemach Tzedek points out in Ora Torah that it also means, for example, that he's able to, when we say that he's able to combine together the letter, the names Kael and Havaya, it represents, he talks about that it's also the Yichud of Havaya and Adna, and Adnai, the ability to combine together the perspective of Yudke Vovke and the perspective of Adnai, which is also Das Elyon and Das Tachton, Shemayim versus Oretz. And therefore, the next thing we're going to say over here is about the Beis Hamikdash. The Beis Hamikdash was the ultimate place where those two things come together. So therefore, we're going to see the same thing is true of the Beis Hamikdash. So for Amar Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar also says in this connection, Godol Mikdash Shenitin Beishtei Osius. The Mikdash is a tremendous thing. It's also placed between two letters, meaning again letters of Hashem's name or the actual names of them, or the actual names themselves. Shenema Pa'alta Hashem and the Shira Sayam. You made Hashem Mikdash, the Beis Hamikdash. Hashem Koninu Yodecha, that Hashem your hands established. So again, Mikdash is between the two things as well. And again, the idea is the Mikdash is the ultimate place in the world where Das of Hashem could be seen. The Rashba has a whole explanation of this in Masechta Brachos, which is it's printed in the Ein Yaakov in Masechta Brachos, and he explains that the point is that a person has the responsibility to reach a Das, to know as much as he can about Hashem, and therefore we're saying Das is such a tremendous thing. It's what separates a human being from the animals, ultimately, and therefore it's so important that it's placed between two names of Hashem, and where is the one place in the world where you have the ultimate ability to get that Das, to most clearly see the Eibishter's presence in our world, is in the Beis Hamikdash. Therefore, that's also Vein Shtei Osius. And then again, as Maharsha says, that's the idea. That Salo was saying had that Das, Yedel of Tzaref Osius, and therefore, appropriately for that, he was the one who was able to build the Beis Hamikdash, because he had that unique capability of Das. So the Gemara says, Maskefer of Adar Kachina. So Rav Adar Kachina says, so you're telling me every time that you have something that's mentioned between two names of Hashem, then it means it's a tremendously great thing. Elameata, by that logic, Gdolan Nekoma, should we say that vengeance, revenge, is a great thing? Shenitna min Shtei Osius, it's also placed between two names of Hashem. Just if Keol Nekoma is Hashem, Keol Nekoma is Sefiah. What's so great about Nekoma? Amalei, so Rabbi Elazar answers him, yeah, l'milsei hochinami. In its proper place, yes, nekama is indeed a tremendously great thing. It is also something special and unique that also is part of how Hashem runs the world. Kidu'ula, Like what Ullah says, the Omar Ullah, Shtei Hefoya Salolu Lama, why does it take twice Hashem appear? So it actually says Hefiya only once in the Pasuk, but in Brachas, rather, the Gir says a little bit different. Why these two Nekomas? Why Kel Nekomas Hashem, Kel Nekomas Hefiya? Rashi over here explains that fine, but since it says Kel Nekomas Hashem, Kel Nekomas Hefiya, since you have, it says twice Nekoma, but it says one Hefa, so it's as if it said one Hefa for each Nekoma. In other words, it is a common style in Psukim to do that, like in Psukim, in Tillim, in particular, you'll often find that thinking. Hinei Evecha Hashem, Hinei Evecha Yevedu, and you have many other examples like that where the composer of the pasuk will start with something and then like he'll interrupt in the middle and then repeat it for emphasis and then continue with it. So the same thing over here. Since it says Keil Nekomas Hashem, Keil Nekomas Hefiya, then we can read it as if Hefiya applied and obtained in connection with both Nekomas. Anyway, so Ullah says, why do you have those two? Achas for midas tova, va'achas for midas puranus. One is one for goodness for the Jewish people and one for punishment for the goyim. Meaning, Rashi explains that what was the Hofa, that Hashem appeared before Matan Torah and offered the Torah to the different nations, and then they all turned it down, they all refused it, and therefore Hefiya may have Torah, and also Mirvus Kodesh, etc., and then Hashem abandoned all of them and came to us Jewish people. So now the word Nekoma can be used not only of punishment. Rashi explains that Nekoma, the basic meaning of Nekoma, is to give somebody what he deserves. Therefore, so one Nekoma is for the Jewish people, for the good, to give us what we deserve for having said Nasa V'Nishma, the positive thing. Then the second Nekoma is that Hashem is going to punish the Goyim, as we'll learn in Masech Da'avad Azara, in a couple of months, that's Hashem, for not having wanted to accept the Torah. And Hashem himself offered it to them, and they turned it down, so that's the Kel Nekoma Sefiah. So now, Marashar explains that, you know, also you have the names Kael and Havaya over here represent Chesed and represent Gvura and Chesed, respectively, Rachamim and Din. So we're saying that now you have Nekoma ties them together, and Hashem shows Rachamim to the Jewish people and Midas Adin for the Umasol. So Nekoma does indeed have its place, and it's part of how Hashem runs the world. And yes, it means that Hashem blends together Din and Rachamim, and gives each group what they deserve. The Gemara continues. V'Amar Rav Elazar, Kol Adam Sheyesh Bei Deah, a person who has Deah, a person who has Tapta, proper understanding as much as best he can of Alakus, Ke'ilu Nivna Beis Hamikdash B'Yomav, it's as if the Beis Hamikdash was built in his times. Shezen Nitin Ben Shteyosius, Shezen Nitin Ben Shteyosius. But we just said both Deah and Mikdash are both between two names of Hashem, showing that there's a certain equality between them. So when a person has that Das, And he would have been, as Maharshal says, he would be like the Tzalo, able to actually build the Beis Hamikdash himself. So therefore, it can be considered as if the Beis Hamikdash was actually Taka built in his times. You have the famous expression from Avihu Paratcher that relative to Rashbi, for example, the Beis Hamikdash was never even destroyed. So that's what we're talking about. Apparently, we're talking about something like that. Like you have a person who has that tremendously high level of Das, and as far as from his point of view, the Beis Hamikdash still exists and is built even now. It's a famous thing that Rabbi Pirate said that Lifnei Neshamas Gvoyas Kirashvi Lenechar Abayas, that the relative to from the point of view of high level Neshamas, like Rashbi, the Beis Hamikdash was not destroyed. Yeah, that's a famous thing that's brought in many places. It's seriously. But Amar Rav Elazar also says, speaking of the greatness of Deah, Kol Adam Sheyesh Bei Deah L'Soif Mis Asher. A person who has Deah is eventually going to become rich. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Uvidas Hadorim Yimolu Kol Hoin Yaakov Anoyim. First, the pasuk describes the previous pasuk describes how a house is built with chokhma and established with bina, with tvuna, and then with das, and then with das, chadorim yimolu, the rooms of that house will be filled up, kol hon yakov noyim, with all kinds of precious and sweet treasures. So we see that the person has day over das, and then he has kol hon yakov noyim. Now, Maharsha says, wait a minute, though. You have a pasuk that says, Loi la chachamim lechem, loi la nevoinim osher, that we often see that chachamim and nevoinim are often lacking bread and often lacking riches. So what do you mean if he has deya, he's going to become rich? So there are other mafoshim who say that when we say rich, we don't mean gashmiyistik of riches. We mean ruchmiyistik of riches, but Maharsha wants to understand we're talking about over here gashmiyistik of ones. So he says, that the Gemara tells us in Nida that the Anshei Alexandria, the Jews of Alexandria, asked Rabbi Shmuel 12 questions, four groups of three questions on different topics, three in Halacha, three in Divrei Chochma, three that the Gemara calls Divrei Burus, etc. Anyway, one of the questions was, what should a person do in order to become rich? So first he tells them that he should do business and they should do business honestly. And they told him, yeah, but many people have done that, and you see they weren't successful. So Yivakish Nachman Misha Osher Shaloi. A person has to daven to Hashem, to whom all wealth belongs. And the Gemara explains it's actually both. The person does have to put in his effort. He does have to make his keli, but he also has to daven to the Eidishter that keli will be filled up. Well, now then, Marashah says that's what we're saying. He has Deya. So he starts by Gaber B'Schoira, but then he realizes that's not working. He has Das to realize that's not the way to go about it. So then he has a Deya to daven for Rachman. So then he accomplishes that then with the combination of those things, then he gets Ashivas. There's an interesting vort on this pasuk, by the way. This is Radas Chadormi Mola, an interesting vort from Rav Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father. He points out, you know, here, the Alter Rebbe tells us in Tanya that, you know, person in Perek Gimel, a person may have Chochma and Bina, and he comes up with this whole great idea, but if he doesn't have Das, then the whole thing is a Demyonis Shav. The whole thing is going to be just empty fantasies because no practical midas are going to come out of it. So he says the word cheder over here, chadorim, cheder is Rosh Hashanah's chesed din rachmin, which are chesed gvura and teferes. So if you want to have that the chadorim are actually going to be filled with something precious and treasured, you need das after. Only with das after the chochma and bina, then you'll have chadorim, then the chesed gvura, chesed din and rachmin are going to be filled up with kolhon yoker v'noyim. Rabbi Elazar says further on this topic of das, kol adam she'ein by deya also rachamalav. A person who doesn't have deya, you're not allowed to have rachmanas on him. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, ki loy am binoisu. The navi says this is a nation that does not have understanding. Therefore, the one who made him, Hashem, is not having rachmanas on him. The Yotzer, and the one who formed him, Lo Yechunenu, is not going to be merciful to him. So we see, because they're lacking bina and they're lacking das, then therefore Hashem is not having rachmanas on them. First of all, Maharsha says that again. What does it mean? Of course, you have to have rachmanas. Of course, rachmanas for myself. But a person was created. Every other creature was created a certain way. The Eibishter gave it certain tendencies, and it follows those tendencies, and it doesn't vary from them. But a person is supposed to have das. So if he doesn't have das, if he doesn't develop his das, then he's lost his surah. Then he's not part of Kol Maisav. Then he can't even call him, so to speak. He's not even, so to speak, a creation of Hashem. Hashem made him a certain way, and he decided. Obviously, we're not talking about a person who's not capable of it for whatever reason. We're talking about a person who's capable and doesn't bother. So it's also to have rachmanus on such a person because he's perverting with the whole purpose that he was put in this world for. And a famous verse from the Rebbeim where they used to say, imagine what a rachmanus on such a person, where the Torah says, also the rachmalav. So in other words, there has to still be a degree of rachmanus for him, for the very fact that he fell so low that he has no deya. The Yad Ramah in particular points out that you have a story in Masechta Bava Basra where Rebbe one time, we learned it a while back in Ein Yaakov, where one time there was a famine and Rebbe was going to distribute food to everybody, but he says everybody who comes has to at least learn something in Torah, not a total Amma Oretz. So the Yad Ramah explains over there because the kind of Amma Oretz that Rebbe didn't want over there and the kind of Ein Bodea that we're talking about over here is not just he didn't learn Torah, he doesn't even have Midas Tovus or Derech Eretz, is what's called in Pirkei Avos a Bur. So then that kind of person is what we're saying, also the Rachamalav. If it's just so that he's an Amoritz, he probably doesn't know how to learn, but he has Midas Tovus, then that's a whole different thing. But again, even if he is a boor, you have the famous expression that the Rebbeim would always say, even if a person is only Drias Ba'alma, the only great thing about him is that he was created by the Eibishter, then still that's a reason to still Oyev as a Brias, to still have a certain Ava and a certain degree of Rachmanis for him as well. One explanation, actually, of this point of Kol Ma'odim Sheyesh Beidei Osel Racham Olav is actually you're talking about a person who wants from you something that's going to be destructive to him or to others. So he has no daya to realize that it's going to be bad for him or bad for others. So if you go and have Rachmanos on him and you're going to go and give it to him, then that's a very bad thing, because then you're just enabling him to do what he shouldn't be doing. So that's another meaning of it as well. V'amar Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar in this connection also says, Kol Ha'noisin Pita, the Misha Ein Bo Deya, a person gives his bread to somebody who doesn't have Deya, Yisurin Boin Olav, and the one who gave the bread, Yisurin are going to come on him. Shenemar, as the passage says, Lach Mecha Yasimu Mozer Tachtecha, your bread they are going to make as Mozer underneath you. So Mozer, as the Gemara is going to explain, is a word for a sickness. Ain't Tvuna Boy, there's no understanding in it. In the context, this is part of a Nevuah against Edom, where Hashem says, where the Navi says in Hashem's name to Edom that you thought you could trust your allies, and meanwhile they're going to betray you, and the food that you thought that you're secure in your food supply, and they're going to make it a sickness to you, because you didn't understand that you can't trust them. But now the Gemara is taking it in a different sense, that your bread you gave to someone ain't tvuna boy, who has no tvuna, who has no das, and therefore yasimu mozer tachtecha, and the result is going to be sicknesses and yisurim in your place. So v'ein mozer ela yisurim, the word mozer refers to yisurim, shenemer v'yar Ephraim ascholye v'yehuda es mizoyra. The passage describes how Ephraim, meaning the kingdom of Eseres HaShvatim, saw how sick they were. They saw that they're in trouble, they're being beset by the goyim around them, v'yehuda es mizoyra, and Yehuda also saw their weakness and their illness. And then the passage describes, instead of turning to the Eivishter and then recommitting to Torah and mitzvahs, instead they go and start trying to make alliances with the goyim all around them. The point is, in other words, we see that the word mizoroi means that the word mazer or mizoroi means a sickness. Meforshim explain that in context, actually, the word mizoroi is more like the healing of the sickness. Like you have, for example, an infection, you have to squeeze it out and then apply medicine. Say that process of squeezing it and applying medicines is called mazer. In any case, the point is that now the Gemara is taking it in the sense a person gives his bread, his food, to somebody who doesn't have Deya, ain't one of boys, so therefore he has Mozer Tachtecha. What's the connection? Marsha says like this. The Gemara tells us in Psachim that, so after the Chet Eitz Hadaas, of course, you know, the snake and Chava and Adam are being punished with all kinds of punishments, and one of the things the Eibishter tells Adam is, V'achalta es Eis v'asodi, you're going to eat the grass of the field. And then the next Pasuk Hashem tells him, B'zeis HaPecha, Tricha Lechem, with the sweat of your brow, you'll eat bread. So what is it? Is he eating grass or is he eating bread? So the Gemara explains that the Gemara explains in Psachim that Adam started crying. He said, "What do you mean, you're a chalta? So I'm going to have to eat grass like an animal?" So the Eibishter tells him, "No, b'zeis apecha tercha lechem." So in other words, Marsha explains, Adam thought, "Well, if I eat grass, I'm going to have a mind like. If I eat grass like an animal, I'm going to have a mind like an animal. I don't want that." So the Eibishter tells him, "Fine, you're going to have human food. You're going to have bread instead, and therefore you'll have the das of a human being." Well, what happens now? This person who ain't by Deya, so therefore, what's he doing eating bread? What are you doing giving him bread for? Give him grass like an animal. Give him a donkey and give him grass like you would to a donkey. And if a person is not, then the Gemara is saying he deserves Yisurim for that, because, like, so to speak, he's wasting his food on somebody who is not using it for the right purpose anyway. How do you know who has Deya and who doesn't? So obviously you need to tell. I mean, you need to be able to evaluate. In that story in Bava Basra, Rebbe announces that only those who've learned at least Mikra, Mishnah, Halacha, whatever, can come and apply for assistance and apply for food over here, and not the Amei Aretz. In the end, the Gemara tells us that one of Rebbe's Talmidim posed as an Amei Aretz and then came and convinced Rebbe to give him food anyway. But again, the Yad Ramah explains over there. Now that's the reason why there. So the Gemara explains over there that why Rebbe didn't want to give food to the Amei Aretz, but the Yad Ramah says it goes together with our Gemara over here, because we're not just talking about Amei Aretz as in Parshat people who, like, they had to leave Cheder when they were little kids and help support their families or whatever, and they never had a chance to learn Torah. We're talking about people who have no Torah, no Derech Eretz, no Midas, no nothing, and therefore that's the kind of person we're saying that don't be giving them your bread. Again, though, you know, there is the point that the Rebbe always said, you know, that what a Rachmanos on such a person, that the Gemara is saying don't have Rachmanos on him. See, so don't just write him off completely.
Well,
what is he supposed to eat? So Marsha is saying, I'll derech hadurush. The point is, let him eat grass. If he's going to be like an animal and not have das, then he may as well eat like an animal. In practice, what would he eat? I mean, look, you know, in practice, he'll probably have some kind of parnosa himself and then eat something. The point is that, the Gemara is saying you need to hold back for you. You may need to hold back from giving it to him, especially also, again, you know, if it's just going to encourage him to be more self-destructive, then there's that consideration also. Okay. And the Gemara continues. The Amar of Elazar, another thing about Deya, Kol Adam Shein by Deya will serve Goyla. A person who doesn't have Deya in the end is going to go in Golos. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Lachen Gola Amim Mibli Das. Therefore, my people has gone into Golos for a lack of Das. So we see that the lack of Das brings Golos. Marsha ties this together with the part we said before about that if he has Deya, will serve Mishashe. So a person has Deya, he becomes rich, meaning, as we said, he starts by trying to earn a living in the regular way. He realizes that's not enough. He realizes he needs to dive into the Eibishter as well. You see, Yuvakash Nachmim, Lemisha Oisha Shaloy, and therefore that helps him get Ashiros. Meanwhile, what happens is, this person who doesn't have Das, he throws himself into Marva Beskoda. He's going more and more into that, but he doesn't have Das. He never asks for Nachmim. So eventually he becomes poor, and then he ends up having to go into Golos because he ends up having to move someplace else in order to be able to try to make a living. So therefore, that's the connection. Ion Yaakov points out over here, you know, La'asid Lover, you have a Malar Deyas Hashem. So therefore, there's a whole world will be full of Deya. Therefore, there won't be any Golos anymore.
Again, we finished
with something of Avinyani Mashiach, yeah. Well, this whole Perek, a large part of this Perek has things about Mashiach in it, so that's going to happen a lot of times, yeah. Alright, well, Yom Mashiach Ogola, for Chavches Menachem Og. The Rebbe was talking about we have to teach, and publicize and reveal in the whole world. We have to reveal the Alufa Shel Olam, the famous idea that the words Goyla and Geula have only the letter Aleph in between, as a difference between them, and that represents revealing the Alufa Shel Olam in the world, and that includes influencing the Umas Olam as far as keeping the Shev Mesir and preparing them for B'Hoyz Al Hashem Amalufa. Continuing with halachas of tefillin, now, if you borrow somebody else's tefillin, you're allowed to make a bracha on them, that you can be yotze with somebody else's tefillin. It's not like, for example, somebody else's lulav and esrog. And it's also not like, for example, we learned about tzitzis, where there are certain cases where we said that you don't make a bracha on a borrowed talis. But here, with tefillin, the difference is basically that tefillin is choyvas chefza. It's a choyva if you have a four-cornered garment and you have to put tzitzis on it, as opposed to tefillin is a choyvas gabra. Minatora, a person would actually be yotze even with stolen tefillin, even if the owner hasn't had yush yet. Because tefillin don't have to be shalcha. But the Chachamim said that stolen tefillin are posel, as long as the Gazlan has them in his possession, even if there was Yush already, because the mitzvah bar ba'aveda, and Hashem finds such a thing disgusting. So if a person does put on such tefillin, he shouldn't make a bracha on them, there's no mitzvah. This is, it says, a vetzea beirach nietz Hashem, a robber makes a bracha, and he's insulting Hashem with that. Vamed vonam amurim, though, then the Altareba continues, when would that be? If it's still in the possession of the Gazlan. But if the Gazlan sells it to somebody else, and the owner already had Yush, then you're allowed to make a bracha on them, because then already you have Yush and Shinu Rishus, and then as it talks about in various places in Chosh and Mishpat, then it's actually considered to be his, so therefore he didn't actually accomplish the mitzvah through the Avera, because already the tefillin were already, he already acquired the tefillin, and therefore they're not called Gezel. So therefore he'd be able to make such a bracha on them. A different din, by the way, related to that, which we're not talking about over here, we're going to get to later on, is the din that, for example, if a goy stole tefillin and you want to buy it back from him, so you do try to buy it back from him, but not so you don't leave it in his hands, but don't offer too high a price because you don't want to give them an incentive to steal them again. The Gemara actually tells a story in that connection where one time a Goyish lady came to Abaya with a pair of tefillin, and it's the other way around also. You can't offer too much because it'll encourage them just to steal more, but the Gemara says also don't offer too little because then the guy will just think, oh, he'll just throw it away. And the Gemara actually tells a story where one time a Goyish lady comes to, an Arab woman comes to Abaya with a pair of tefillin, and Abaya offers her something cheap for it, and she got so angry she threw it in the river. And Abaya says, you know what, yeah, I realize from that, I shouldn't have insulted her by offering such a low price. I did once read a story many years ago where a goy comes to a store with a pair of stolen tefillin, and the storekeeper, the yid pretends like, wait a minute, this is only half of it. This is only the one for one arm. Where's the other one? And you're giving me something that's not even the whole thing. And like, he offers him $5 for it, and the guy's like, he didn't know, of course, and so that way, so it can work, but you have to use a little safe look. You have to use a little safe. Samsa Parshnik also is another story about that. Yeah, so you have to use a little safe. You have to use, as we just had in the Gemara, you have to use a little daya to know how to deal with such people. Yeah.